I have a secret.
Uh-huh.
I use Secret Whole Body Deodorant because more than just my armpits stink.
Oh, can I use it where my bra rubs under my...
Oh, yeah.
And what about down there? You know, my...
Totally. 4 out of 5 gynecologists would recommend it. So I tried it, and now I get 72 hours of freshness. From my pits to my...
Ooh, I love that it's a spray.
Me too. And it comes in sticks and creams too. Go get your Secret Whole Body Deodorant.
The Boston Marathon, presented by Bank of America, has thousands of runners running for thousands of reasons.
I'm running to raise money for Achilles International so amputee athletes can keep running too.
For every mother counts, because all women deserve access to quality maternity care.
For St. Jude Children's Research Hospital and every kid with cancer who just wants to be a kid again.
Join Bank of America in supporting this year's runners. Give if you can at bofa.com/help-a-cause. References to charitable organizations is not an endorsement by Bank of America Corporation. Copyright 2024.
With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot, you can get up to $2,300 off select kitchen packages from top brands like GE Profile. That means you can save on a new GE Profile smart quad door refrigerator that's full of convenient features like a dual dispense auto fill pitcher and an ice dispenser with up to 12.5 pounds capacity. Bring convenience to your kitchen with smart, innovative appliances from GE Profile. Right now, save up to $2,300 on select kitchen packages with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Week 23, Season 1, Episode 5, Rocky is over, but we're just getting started over here, post-show recaps. Hello, my friends. It is I, Rich Liberto, DM Philly, out here on the internet, back with you again. Super psyched to be talking Beacon 23. I, of course, am not alone. I am joined by a man who is often in my dreamlike hallucinations, the one and only Corey B. Corey, how are you?
Doing great, Rich. I appreciate that you allow me into your hallucination space every week. I genuinely appreciate it. I thought maybe we could have an opera night together later, maybe put on our classical 1750s to 2150s playlist that our friend Solomon curated and just kind of hang out in hallucination space.
I would love to. I will feed you some handmade raviolis with a blood orange foam and an overtly expensive soy sauce that you can copiously pour all over the plate. It'll be a good time. I'm just concerned because I'm not sure if you're real or not, Corey.
That's totally fair. You know, apparently if we both can see the thing, we're both real, even though I could be imagining you seeing the thing. So I'm just not sure if that's totally sound logic. But, you know, I think sometimes we just have to roll with the punches.
I think that that's accurate. I will be imagining us holding hands for the rest of this recording.
And who knows if we really are or not.
Yeah, one will never know. Certainly you could if you were watching us on YouTube, postshowrecaps.com. YouTube, postshowrecaps. You can catch us all there. All these VODs of the podcast are going up weekly as we're recording them. We're having a good time breaking it all down. Episode 5, we're past the halfway point, Corey. A bunch of the things that we've been talking about, it feels like they have occurred now. We got some clarity. But how are you feeling about this one? Rocky.
Feeling good. First of all, you may or may not believe this, but Rocky is a character from the books.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Yeah. Not only that, but in the books, Rocky is also a rock. So, you know, I did mention that the books don't really have the mineral plot going on, but they do have Rocky. So I really like that they sort of put these two things together. Really enjoying the sort of all of the exposition that got revealed to us in this episode. And really, as you mentioned, like we had so many questions, we had speculation, and it all does seem to be going in a relatively similar direction to what we were sort of anticipating, hoping, predicting so far. But there are still so many mysteries that I'm not sure what's going to happen with them too. So I think this is the perfect turn right at the halfway, you know, post halfway point for the show to take.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, we had a good time talking about episode four. We had such a deviation of this kind of flashback to the origins of the Beacon and all of it.
Yeah.
But I think that the pacing has really been excellent. I mean, it's not, it feels like mystery box-esque of a show, but it's not so firmly rooted in that. I feel like it's very character-driven also. That being said, I think they're doing a really good job of like answering questions while provoking new ones, and I don't feel like we're getting this kind of, you know, pile up of inquiries that oftentimes when I'm watching modern shows, I end up kind of closing out a season one feeling frustrated because so much stuff gets held back. And we're in this strange position with Beacon 23 where we know a season two is going to be coming. So, but regardless of that, I'm feeling really secure of like, okay, season one's got an agenda and it's gonna like fulfill on that agenda. It's gonna clarify a bunch of these questions for us by the end. It's instilling a lot of confidence in me for a freshman season of TV, you know?
I totally agree. And it's definitely a nitpick, a pet peeve of mine when, you know, when it's sort of like watching capacity of a building or a store and seeing how many people walk in versus how many people leave to see if it's getting more or less crowded. And I feel like when you have these secrets or these points of drama that you're holding over the audience, you still need to have some departing and some coming in as the series comes across. And of course, you could have an influx, and I'm sure there's some debate over, you know, exactly how you might want to ideally structure that in a show. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you mentioned, yeah, we're getting a season two, but they're still not pulling any punches in terms of we're going to show you some things that are happening. We're going to reveal this exposition to you. And for a lot of it, we're going to reveal it in a way that actually is conducive, like plot wise, where all the characters can just be up to date on this exposition so that, you know, we could just keep moving forward and get to more interesting things. And I do really like the pacing so far in that respect.
Yeah, it's been very strong. I got a little bit of feedback from a listener. I just want to drop in and talk through with you before we crack into talking about episode five. But Mark Bellis hit me up on Twitter, and he was saying that he's been digging the coverage of the show. Thank you, Mark. We love to hear from you. But he has a nit to pick himself, where he's talking about how gravity in spacecrafts are usually created by rotating the spacecraft, usually along the long axis of the craft, right? Typically, we would see like a long cylinder like this kind of like rotating, you know, on its edge. And the exterior would be the kind of surface level. But he fundamentally sent me a pretty long message here with a bunch of very specific points about how when we see the beacon depicted on from the outside, it is not kind of like cartwheeling end over end, which it would need to be to create the central axis of gravity in the kind of like vertical space of the tube. I'm talking about these very visual concepts in an audio medium. So I don't know how well they're
translating. I think I'm following you. You need the circular spinning motion in order to generate artificial gravity. And it's not doing what it needs to do to be able to do that. And it is a cylindrical, it has a cylindrical hallway. So I think the argument could be like, since there are these, it is sort of based around a cylinder, and they could have made it seem more realistic in terms of the gravitational pull side of things. I think that's totally fair. I don't know enough about, you know, generating artificial gravity to dispute it. And I think maybe the show is banking on most people not knowing enough about artificial gravity to, you know, to dispute it too.
Just to clarify, Mark is certainly not like an angry fan
who's indignant
about this. He's very charming in the way that he's kind of nitpicking it. He just says at the end,
I'm a huge nitpick, so I totally get it. I'm sure I would have said the same thing if I had that requisite background to know that information.
I can't lie. I reflected on it for a moment because there's part of me that that always asks these kind of crazy questions, like, well, maybe there's some kind of like centrifuge in the center that is creating like a gravitronic force, you know, but there's like no like mass down there. And how would that work? How is it like creating equal gravity on both sides and like not getting stronger? Fundamentally, Mark just says at the end, I really hope they come up with some tech babble to explain this all away.
Yeah, which tech babble like, solves all.
Entirely relate to Mark. So I thought that that was just a fun thing to stop down in on.
Yeah, I love that.
I think about the gravity of like space stations often on these types of shows, mostly because of my experiences in the Gravitron at carnivals as a young man. The absolute best carnival ride, Corey.
The Gravitron.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've ever, when I was a kid, I was a little too scared to do the Gravitron. Mm-hmm. And I think I never revisited it as an adult. So
it's very fair. I had a real Marty McFly syndrome where if you called me chicken, I would do it.
And oh, sure.
Subsequently, I rode the Gravitron a lot. Corey, yeah. I got a bit of a short, long recap I can crack into. And then we could talk about the episode proper if that sounds good.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. Halen and Aster are discussing what happens with Coley. Harmony ultimately explains that Aster should keep Coley's battle suit as evidence, and the pair end up going to Halen's suit to bring up footage from his last mission. Halen finds them, and he's shocked to realize that this footage has been stored in his suit the whole time. They see him in the footage breathe in the blue rock dust just before he lost his memory on his mission, and Aster asserts to him that he didn't run, that the rock brought him here. They end up realizing that the QTA has a follow-up team coming to check in on Coley and arriving in 14 hours. Aster says they need to run, and Halen confirms he can fly Coley's ship as Harmony gets them access to it. Halen ends up with another vision, which knocks him out, and he hears whispers calling his name as he's waking up. He ends up going up to the GWB, and he finds his old comrade, Gishad. She says that she's here to help, and that she was sure he left them for a reason before she died in battle, claiming he has very important things to do. She tries to tell him something he needs to do, but it sounds like gibberish. He ends up hearing another voice, and he finds one of the rocks who claims, I was there during his last mission. The rock tells him to ask Aster what to do, saying she knows. But when he runs up to the cupola, he finds her floating outside the beacon. Meanwhile, as Aster is loading the rocks onto Coley's ship, Harmony alerts her that Bart has opened the picker doors and Halen is outside the beacon without a suit. She manages to retrieve him and explains he was hallucinating and saw Gishad. She says that she believes him, and Harmony takes her aside to show her Halen's brain scans, saying that he's infected as though with the virus. The AI chastises Aster for looking for a deeper meaning behind all of this, saying that she needs to consider how she's going to position herself for the QTA. But Aster asserts that she is not going back to the QTA. Bart, at this point, is very angry and offers his story about Solomon, showing them footage of Halen's arrival at the beacon. We see Solomon baking and treating Bart quite dismissively. Solomon ultimately dismisses Halen's call for aid when he arrives, and surprisingly, Bart advocates for helping the distressed soldier. They argue, and Solomon asserts that he is Beacon 23 and denies permission to the AI. But Halen somehow makes it on board anyway. These two do not make for compatible cohabitants. As Halen sleeps, Solomon goes to use the quantum tunneler to send a message that the keeper is in danger, but Halen ends up stopping him at the last second. Alarms start firing off, and Bart says that the GWB has been shut down. And while Solomon is trying to silence him, he helps Halen repair the GWB just before two ships arrive. Halen ends up chaining Solomon to his bed, and they argue a bit. Solomon, in the argument, revealing just how far Halen has traveled before arriving here, pointing out ultimately, Halen has no idea why he's at Beacon 23. He yells about his discovery of Soluminium, but Halen himself falls unconscious from another vision, allowing the geologist to free himself. As Solomon frees, Bart pleads desperately with him. Halen ends up waking up, realizing Solomon's on his ship, trying to warn Bart, but the AI says that soon his reign of terror will be at an end. Halen acknowledges there's no O2 left in the ship. He has not refilled it yet. And as Bart desperately calls Solomon, the man does not answer. Ultimately, Solomon blaming Halen, or Bart blaming Halen for Solomon's departure and naming him as a killer, Halen shuts down his systems, and the AI repeats Solomon's last words, claiming he is Beacon 23. Back in the current day, Harmony and Aster have ended up watching this entire tape, and Bart asks for some of his settings to be restored. Harmony points out that his fixation on Halen is obscuring his ability to identify the facts, but Bart doubles down that the man's a murderer and deserves justice. Aster shows Halen his brain scans and suggests the QTA may be her enemy now, but they might be able to help him. Harmony asks Aster if she's prepared for the repercussions of her plan, pointing out that despite her rights as a high-level AI, she is bound to the QTA and cannot leave here with Aster. Halen ultimately seems to be having a conversation with Rocky, who asserts that he is not an infection, and Harmony appears. As the pair debate whether she is part of his hallucination or real, she explains that this is very important, not just for him, but also for Asper, and whispers something into his ear. He says this is a terrible idea, and he suddenly wakes up seemingly from a dream with Rocky talking to him. The Rock claims that his pals on the antenna have a job for Halen, and the man enters the antenna room, appearing to push the antenna bay open and allowing many of the rocks loose into the vacuum of space. Harmony and Aster see something on the scans as thousands of rocks appear to tumble out from the beacon. They destroy Coley's ship and are seeming to damage the beacon slightly. As Harmony and Aster and Halen fall back into the cupola, and the pair watch the rocks move in a kind of migratory pattern where they swarm around a nearby star. That is episode 5 of Beacon 23. I don't even know where to start here, Corey. There's so much going on.
There is a ton going on, and there's sort of, this is sort of like a three-act arc in this episode, right?
Yeah,
at the beginning,
sure,
we sort of have the you know, the initial view of Halen's suit and sort of getting a little background on Halen's mission and sort of talking about his backstory. Then they start watching the backstory of Halen with Solomon. And then at the end, we have you know, Rocky taking charge and sort of seeing all of the sort of the I don't know if it's a star or if it's like a new thing that they're orbiting around, but either way, the rocks wanted to be freed.
Yeah, I wasn't sure, right? I mean, there's this light pulsing from behind it. It doesn't feel like they're like, you know, destroying Coley's ship floats off in a different direction. So I just kind of assumed it was a star, but yes, this three-act structure I think is very pointed. It really, specifically shifting out of the Solomon flashbacks, you feel that like, okay, third act, here we go.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is really, I think we made a point to talk about how we really love to see a lot of these things that we flash back to. And we got all of them in one episode, right? We got the Halen flashback of the war scene. We even got it in a way I thought Halen would be mad when he saw Aster looking at it. And he wasn't. He was just like, I didn't know that you could pull the footage from my suit. That's awesome. Hesitant, obviously, but not upset. And then you have the finally, we actually get to go back. We knew Harmony had already seen it, but we actually get to go back and watch Bart's story. I always sort of assumed that Bart was embellishing. Mm-hmm. And we basically just get direct, concrete confirmation of that. Halen had no idea why he was there. And he actually tried to save Solomon from his mistake. And Bart just, you know, was being Bart. Ultimately.
Yeah, let's talk about the Solomon beat a little bit. So Steven Root as Solomon, fantastic, right? We've pretty much only used him in these still shots so far, but he's so incredibly over the top and magnificent, singing his opera in the shower, making his blood orange foam for his raviolis. It's just like unbelievable. But what I found so pointed is, as we're coming off this kind of origin story of Bart and the way that Bart has been so kind of set up to be this desperate child in many ways, how cruel Solomon is to him. Like, Solomon's not overtly malicious, I guess, but he's like contemptuous of the AI and treats it badly. He calls him an imbecile when he's talking about like setting the oven temperatures. He's just like so cutting and dismissive. And Bart's like so desperate. As Solomon goes to flee, Bart's chasing him like, wait, please take me with you. Don't you want to bring a copy of me at least? it's so it really subverted my expectations of what that relationship would look like, Corey.
Absolutely, because we've only had Bart's perspective of it up until then, and it seemed like they had, you know, the mother-son-ish relationship that we saw last episode with Sophie. I kind of thought maybe it would be like a repeat of that, but Solomon really did not care. You know, I think that Solomon didn't dislike Bart. He you know, the Shakespeare stuff was from Solomon. Obviously, they had their opera nights together. There was some bonding there, but Solomon was really dismissive. And I think Solomon's personality kind of boiled down to he was just focused on the mission, right? He was willing to turn off the GWB and let people die just so that he could escape and his findings would not go to waste. He was ensuring, you know, he's constantly breaking protocol just to save himself. And I think he would absolutely do the same thing with Bart. So it's really a fascinating look at Solomon. You only really saw him in that one scene we also saw in this episode where he's saying to cut the footage and doing the throat slit motion to cut the footage. And you can't really glean that much about him. So the fact that he was this much of a fun character was quite the surprise.
Last week we had again this like kind of origin story, and as we're talking about Sophie and Milan Aleph, and Sophie had kind of identified Milan as a narcissist and an egomaniac, and I tracked a lot of that onto Solomon as he's like ranting about his journal someday abutting a mineralist will sleep with this under their pillow. He's naming the rock Solominium after himself. He is so like kind of crazed about his discovery, and I think that you get it in, you know, the culture and the way that he displays it, the like, you know, overt kind of energy that he's putting into making this ridiculous ravioli dish for himself and his incredibly pretentious soy sauce, and even just him like singing opera in the shower. This guy really takes himself very seriously, right?
he does. And it's funny because it's not just the fact that he has the food and the soy sauce, which I think it's funny because it's like I think it's supposed to be like vintage soy sauce, aka the soy sauce that we use today. But you know, he spent years acquiring it. But I think I really caught that in how he was treating Halen when he was feeding him. And he was still so worried about this guy ultimately, but he's feeding him this meal, he's presenting it, he's saying all the things. As soon as Halen doesn't like it, oh, perhaps I can, and he goes and grabs the condiments. Oh yes, the condiments, you know, these are my, and he cannot like stop operating from this like I don't want to say condescending, but this very, he wants to be the authority, right? He wants to be the one who is presenting to you, and you admire everything that he's done and he's put together. And so he is this sort of collector in that way. He wants to exhibit his findings, his work, his cooking, no matter what. And he just cannot stop. And down to the very last minute of this episode, I feel like he's constantly doing that. Even the captivity scenes where Halen shackles him to the wall, like he's still acting that way, and I love that about him.
Yeah, it's fantastic because you know people like this, right? Like everybody knows somebody with that absolutely superior mindset, and there is always that little bit of like condescension in almost everything they say to you.
This episode is brought to you by Auto Trader. Credit scores, down payments, interest rates. Car buying can be a numbers game, but you don't have to be a math expert to get the keys to your dream car. Just use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on Auto Trader. You can crunch the numbers so you know exactly how much you'll pay each month for your car. So leave the calculator at home. Visit autotrader.com to learn more.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to bite into Nerds gummy clusters? They're fruity. They're tangy. They're gummy. And they're crunchy. Nerds Gummy Clusters, a union of fruity sweet gummy and tangy crunchy nerds. Unleash your senses. Shop now at nerdscandy.com.
Visit Rivers Casino and Resort, the Capital Region's ultimate entertainment destination. With live table games, a winning dining experience, live entertainment, and so much more. Don't miss our $10,000 Collect and Go drawing on Friday, April 27th at 8 p.m. 10 guests will be drawn for the chance to win their share of $10,000 cash. Earn entries all month long by playing your favorite games or participating in our $50,000 Collect and Go sticker challenge on Thursdays and Fridays. Good times are always on the table at Rivers Casino and Resort. Must be 21 plus to gamble. Gambling problem? Call 1-877-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So yeah. Let's talk about Bart a little bit. Did this track for you of the through line? We obviously got some clarity of where Bart comes from, but I did feel a little bit like the maybe weakest part of this episode for me is Bart's kind of shifting perspective of Halen from like the desperation to like, we have to help this man. He's going to die. Like, we've got to let him in here, to then like he and Halen being able to like shut the GWB down together, like Bart's kind of countermanding Solomon all the way along. But then we get to the point of like the second that Solomon is chained up, Bart's like, your reign of terror will soon be over. You know, he just like flips the switch. Was it like jarring for you, or did that track well enough?
I think it was a little jarring for me, and I think that maybe you could rationalize that to the relationship that he either wanted or felt that he had with Solomon. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's fine with counteracting Solomon and arguing with him and doing all this stuff, but when Solomon is actually gone and dead, presumably mm-hmm. dead, I guess we never really see him die.
Yeah.
Then that's when, you know, he realizes that, you know, Halen took Solomon away from him. Ultimately, he was expecting to abandon ship with Solomon and didn't. So I think he was fine with letting Halen have the beacon. And I think that's sort of when their points converged, when he realized that Solomon was, he's like, bring me with you. And it didn't happen. I think you could argue that. I still think that in execution, it did feel a little weird that this, like you said, the switch sort of flipped relatively quickly, and maybe there would have been a little more padding. I also wonder, like, was Solomon the beacon keeper directly after Sophie, or were there beacon keepers in between? I think it said it was 180 years ago when it happened, so there were probably some in between.
I think there were some in between. I feel like in one of those screens we clocked, but it might have been the beacon keepers before Sophie, I think, now that I'm reflecting on it. But I think there have definitely had to have been some people in between. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't bothersome to me. I didn't think it was bad. I just felt like in a show where I'm pretty consistently impressed with the pacing and the character development, that felt a little bit jarring, just like scene to scene, the way that he shifts. But I think that there was something to the AI of it all, that it is a little bit unnatural, and it is also like positioning, like it's almost like he's trying to entreat himself to Solomon and win more of Solomon's affection by being so defensive once he ends up like imprisoned. And that was interesting to me. So this felt like a big Halen episode, as we're getting like a little bit more clarity on his backstory. Gashad shows up, all the kind of, you've got to do something important, Halen. And then the kind of like gibberish sounds. Was the important thing he had to do just to release the rocks? Did we get there by the end?
I think that's what it was. But I guess you never really know for sure if the thing that Gashad was trying to tell him, or that, you know, Ghost Gashad was trying to tell him was that or not. But I also, the whole thing about releasing the rocks is interesting, because the rocks have been there for a long time. They obviously can float on their own. So what was ever stopping them from congregating together in the first place? Was it proximity? Was it that Halen was somehow connected to them?
It's the gravity system of the beacon. That's what's got them. They can't escape the beacon's gravity.
It all goes back to the weird gravity.
Indeed it does. So the visions and the way that we're kind of playing with them, like some of them seemed very overt and explicit, but as we shift into that last one, where Harmony shows up and he's kind of questioning, are you real? Like there's my dream version of this AI is like asserting its autonomy and its human rights. Like this makes absolutely no sense. And she's like, I'm here to help. Did this stuff work for you? Like, is this getting a little too like etheric and separated from the physical realm? Or are you feeling like pretty good about the way that they're presenting all of this so far?
The one thing that I liked that they did in that last scene, which they didn't do on some of his other hallucinations, and I get it was like the first time, so I get it, but they had this like sort of half translucent shot of him sort of sleeping.
Yes.
In the background of a lot of
superimposed.
This. Yes. Yeah,
over
yes.
Like, the hammock. Yep.
And I think that was the thing that made me feel a little better about it, because they were not shying away from the fact that this was a vision or hallucination. And for the audience, I was not as confused. Like, is this real or is this not real? I feel like that's sort of the ethereal nature, the visions, the communicating via these dreams or via Rocky. That's all fine with me, as long as it goes somewhere interesting. But I feel like that where it can lose me is if I'm guessing the whole time what's real and what's not. I'm fine if Halen is, but I'd prefer if I wasn't, at least not the whole time. You know, throw in a good piece or two if it's a good enough mystery, but I want to kind of know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think it's always much more powerful to give the audience the knowledge. This is a thing I talk about a lot in the context of tabletop role-playing games, that there is this sense that like the surprise, the twist, the reveal is where all of the energy is. But oftentimes that's not the case. There's something really deeply satisfying about having read the book and then watching the adaptation and having the sense of like how things are going to come together and being able to kind of project where a story is going and be vindicated and feel like validated in your expectations because of good foreshadowing and stuff like this. I'm digging it. I just was curious, is like, it's such a grounded sci-fi show, and we're dealing with these really spiritual, metaphysical, kind of like etheric, like, you know, untethered ideas. And sometimes that works really well. Like Battlestar Galactica, the kind of exploration of science versus faith, is one of my favorite sci-fi properties of all time. But I'm curious if that's like landing, you know, as we're exploring this. So part of where we get with Aster is that she's firmly in this camp of like, okay, so the rocks are talking to you. I believe you. And he's like, how could you believe me? This is insane. Like, you should not believe me. I'm telling you this so you could like ground me out. And she's like, well, is it insane? You know, so this like kind of battle internally that she's waging, that we're getting kind of articulated in her conversations with Harmony, where she's desperate to believe there's something bigger here, that they're connected, that the rocks all mean something. How's that working for you? Is it like resonating?
I thought it was refreshing how Aster was just like, yeah, okay. And obviously like Harmony did try to ground her later, and she sort of fell into that for a little bit and was like, I'm going to leave. But like, I think that, again, I don't mean to be like, oh, this show is subverting every single trope, because I'm sure they're not. But I like when they subvert a trope. And I like the idea that Aster herself is sort of like, yeah, okay, this works. And she's seen enough. She's seen enough that ultimately she knows that something's going on. And she's like, I'm okay with this explanation. And I think that's cool. I like that a lot.
I do as well. I find it super refreshing. I think it's so easy. Aster is such a pragmatic, practical character.
Yeah.
I think it would be easy to make her skeptical and to like paint that attribute on with the others, because they kind of fit together. So I like the idea that she's got this open mind and that like she's not boxing herself out to possibilities. I think that there's an interesting exploration there in terms of like the humanity versus the AI, that Harmony can't even like entertain these possibilities. And Aster's like, but we have to consider it, you know.
I was gonna go there too. I think that that's really, you know, the belief versus science of it all. I think also comes down to, again, we had this the same thing in the previous episode, where this artifact that Milan was looking for cannot be seen except by humans. So there's obviously this very maybe not even just like belief versus science, it's also just the added aspect of what is humanity. Is it the emotion? Is it the ability to see past, not necessarily to ignore, because I don't think any of them is ignoring that Halen has a virus in his brain, but to look past that and see something else, you know, between the lines, as it were. I don't think it's necessarily combating his virus as much as it is suggesting that there might be something within all of that that's driving all of this forward. And I think that's a cool way, a cool spin on a fairly standard theme. in a lot of these things.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, as we're kind of exploring, we get Harmony a couple of times asserting her rights as a higher functioning AI, yeah. Right? She talks about this, even despite this, she even like names the specific like legal accord that empowered mm-hmm. the rights and the kind of sovereignty, the personhood of these AIs. Right. So as we're dealing with like, is this, you know, the AI that's a person, the other AI that's personhood has like been very stripped away at Bart as he's like boxed up and being reprimanded for being a bad child in a lot of ways. But then we get to this notion of Rocky and the rocks and the virus. And at one point, Aster kind of asks Harmony, well, couldn't a virus be communicating with them? A virus is a living organism, right? Yeah. And as we're exploring these different ideas of personhood, and as we're literally dealing with like anthropomorphic rocks, you know,
yeah.
talking rocks, it becomes a really interesting question. And I think that the show is provoking very intentionally of like, what is a people? What is a person? There's a thing I say a lot about my cats that I get a lot of like real bad looks, Corey, where I'm like, look, I know they're not human, but that doesn't mean that they're not people in the sense of like, how do you evaluate that? These are like very fundamental, sure. important entities in my life that have personalities. They have likes, they have dislikes. They're willful, they're impetuous. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. How are they not people? You know?
I totally understand that. And they have emotions and they feel, and you can tell, right? And so, yeah, they're different, but that doesn't mean that they're not worth in general, right? Yep. And I think that that's an interesting thought. It's not just Rocky, it's this whole virus. Is this virus something that helps Halen communicate with maybe some other species that we didn't think existed that is actually a pile of rocks? Like, we don't know. And Halen still might partially be going a little loopy, and that's certainly a possibility. But I also want to mention on that note, like Rocky's a fantastic character. I love Rocky. That shot where Halen wakes up in bed and Rocky's like next to him on the pillow and he's like wakey wakey, and I don't know, that just cracked me up so much. And that was actually right after that scene where we were like, I was saying there was, you know, the superimposition of him sleeping, and that was just such great comic relief right there. I love Rocky.
Yeah, episode 5, quietly the funniest episode of Beacon 23, like by far, man. The inclusion of Rocky, of like Halen being like, I can't take advice from a rock, man. And Rocky's like, why not? I've been around a long time. I know a lot of things, you know. You got a thin skin. He's talking to you humans and your thin skin. You can't take the heat. You can't take the cold. Like, it was really hilarious. There was even like a bunch of really good comedy between Aster and Harmony, of Aster like just giving Harmony these looks as Harmony's like talking about the recordings or the suit. Like, it was a very, very funny episode, I thought, which Beacon 23 has not been particularly funny. Like, it has its moments, and I think Lena Headey is like fantastic at like seizing those comedic opportunities when they provide with her like serious Rocky exterior, you know, pun intended. But Rocky is a plus character. I mean, this guy, we needed this guy to like mix up the dynamic in the Beacon, Corey.
Yes, definitely. And I almost think there's something to taking all these serious moments, building up the characters, and now that we know truly who they are and their true intentions, we can kind of ease off and let off some steam a little bit.
Yes.
I think Rocky is the catalyst for that, at least for Halen.
Yes, this is another great D&Dism of like the quest to like, you know, go find the lost god, and then you do, and it's like, you know, a little like gremlin who just wants to throw like sparkles at everything. It's always like very fun. You talk about subversion of expectations. So talk to me about your thoughts about Rocky. Obviously, you read the story. I have not. There's some context here. You want to like frame it for us a bit?
Yeah, so in the books, I'm part of me is like, I shouldn't say what happened, but I mean, it's so deviated from this plot that I don't think it's a big deal. In the books, the equivalent to Halen, I'll just call him Halen, even though in the books he has no name, sees some life force coming off of the ship that crashes, as we see in the beginning of the show. There's no Aster in the books. There is a woman who shows up on the beacon, but it's not definitively not Aster. And it's a different dynamic. So instead of finding Aster, he finds a life form. It's a box. It has a rock in it. He assumes that, okay, so since there was a life form found and it was centralized to this box, maybe this rock is some other species or creature or something. So He starts hearing it talk to him. He speaks back to it. Its name is Rocky. It's very fun and witty, just like we see in the episode. So all of that was vibing with me. Ultimately, and I don't believe that this is a spoiler because of how much the book deviates from the show, but if you want to close your ears for about 10 seconds, that's fine. But ultimately, the Rock is completely a hallucination. Main character. And the reason why is because the life form that was detected was actually the wood around the box.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, so really that he realized over time that that was sort of what ultimately it was. That being said, Rocky still was sort of instrumental to helping the main character of the book understand largely what was going on, what he needed to do. So in many ways, there are still a ton of parallels between, and I love that they sort of took this idea of him finding this rock in space. And even if the destination is different, they still use that in almost the exact same way as the book. Because I really legitimately was not expecting Rocky to be in the show. So it was a pleasant surprise.
That's a great like pivot and extrapolation off material to really like change it and again subvert. I really love the notion here. I mean, I'm not sure if we have talked about it explicitly on this pod, but it vibes with like the, you know, end of Harry Potter. I mean, spoilers for things that are 20 years old, I guess, but it's very like, you know, Fight Club, Tyler Durden, like, Dumbledore and Harry. It doesn't matter if it's not real, if like this is happening kind of a thing. Like, I love the notion that it to me, it's irrelevant if Rocky is real or not at this point. As long as he's interacting with Halen, he's relevant to our story, right? And this whole like idea that Halen posits to Harmony of like, are you real? And she's like, well, I'm here to help. So like, it doesn't matter if it's a psychological manifestation or an external force, though I tend to feel like there's a lot of indicators it's an external force.
I think so too.
I could be mistaken, but this kind of, we drive towards this final scene of like Aster with Halen and they're up in the cupola. I love that we finally given a definitive room name. I love a cupola, Corey.
I was so confused the first time, because the first time I heard the word cupola in this episode was when the voice of Gashad, the whispering like voice, and she's like in the cupola, and I'm like, what did she just say? And it wasn't until the second time that it was said that I was like, I got it. When a normal character said it. But I do like that we actually have a name for the room. So that's great.
Very fun to say cupola. But so they go up to the cupola. They see the rocks moving. And like Aster holds his hand. The pair of them, like clearly the rocks like destroyed Coley's ship. They do not want these people to leave. It feels like is there intentionality here? What are your kind of thoughts, theory, speculation, response to this whole kind of closing arc that we kind of get here?
Yeah. I'm really not sure. Like, it seems like to me, first of all, I do love at the very beginning, in the very first episode, we were talking about how weird it is that the antenna was removed from the beacon. I do want to jump to that for a second, because as much as it wasn't necessarily for the reasons that we thought at the time, it wasn't the thing that broke the beacon. It really wasn't related to any bad motivations on anyone's part, but the fact that these rocks were stored there where the antenna used to be, I assume Solomon took the antenna out to store the rocks, presumably. But then now that they're in that space, Halen can just let them free and they can just float out into space. And presumably since it's gone, I guess that's why the air started getting sucked out into space when he did it. But it was kind of a fun sort of turnaround for that little clue in the beginning. As far as sort of how things end, I think that there's just so much mystery to what these artifacts are. And I'm very curious to know sort of like what is waiting for us next episode? Because is this sentience? Is Rocky? Is this something that is a manifestation of these impulses that he knows he needs to do in his brain, or is it real? And I think that how do you not go into next episode and immediately find that out? And so that's going to be the interesting part to me. And then of course you also have the QTA people coming, mm-hmm. or the people who we believe are QTA. They kind of dropped like a little hint that it's probably QTA. I don't know if you caught that, but like,
I didn't, I thought like Harmony locked it in of like, I guess you're right though. She was like, it's probably QTA. It's the follow-up team coming out.
Yeah. Like, I think she said something like, who else could it be? Or something along those lines, which pinged my senses a little bit there when I heard that line. Because I mean, like, that seems a little foreshadowy to me.
It does, but we're looking at very specific moments in time in Beacon 23 across these episodes. But all these specific moments in time entail random people showing up at the Beacon.
Right? Yeah.
So like, it could very well not be the QTA. I think they've done a great job of like the pressure ticking clock thing, like the continually knowing like, oh, we've only got so much time until this happens or until that happens. That creates this great urgency, you know, and the way that, you know, we're getting to a point of like pretty consistently, they're like, we need to leave the Beacon, and then something happens to prevent them from leaving the Beacon, right? So I feel like this is like the last time we could get real close without it being a little bit frustrating. Like I was not disappointed about Coley's ship getting wrecked and the rocks. I thought it was all pretty satisfying. And there is a sense like the show is named Beacon 23. We're not leaving Beacon right now.
And I've seen stuff on that about on the internet, like, okay, this is already going for a second season. Is it really all going to take place on this little beacon? And so far it seems like yes, it is. And to your point, if they wreck all these available options for escape enough times, it will probably get a little annoying after.
There's only so many times we can like rotate the hamster wheel, right? And I think that there is a danger to expanding too far. I think that the best of the show is really the character driven stuff, and they're doing so much with so little. I'm so taken in by, we've mentioned it in a bunch of these pods, how beautiful it is. I think that the visual effects have been excellent. The music really struck me this episode too, but it's so much like a play, this show, where it really is these just small sets with a couple of people talking. It's very driven by the dialogue. I love how kind of fearless the dialogue is. Again, like, they just don't hold your hand. They really like presume a measure of intelligence on the part of the audience and like media literacy for you to be watching closely and listening and paying attention to catch all these little details, because they do circle back on things. But just to circle back to like Rocky and the rock and the sentience of it all, to me there's like these dangling participles, Corey, of Milan, or Aleph, I guess we should call him, like kind of leaving as this kind of digitized AI presence last time. There's also the whole like Gashad ghost Gashad, and like the Rocky asserting, I was there during your last mission. Like, is there some measure of like sentience from the people that died? Are they literally ghosts? Are they ghost rocks that are being like absorbed into there?
I wondered that too.
Yeah. Right? Then you have the Solomon factor of like, Solomon leaves and never replies, and all the factors say like he suffocated on that ship, right? But we don't see the
body. Don't know. We didn't see it.
And like, you got Steven Root. Like, I'm a trained TV viewer. I didn't see a corpse. Like, I don't know what's going on there. So I'm really curious if some measure of like the intelligence, the persona of the rocks, of Rocky, is one of these other factors. Is like somebody that we're already familiar with to some degree, or like a completely alien life form. And that's part of the question that I'm like hanging on as we're driving towards episode 6.
Well, and I also wonder, because when you went through these things, it popped up in my mind, something we haven't talked about is that the rocks had Halen almost kill himself.
Yeah, very true. They did make him walk out the airlock.
Yeah, for no reason. They made him picture Aster out there lifeless in space so that he would rescue her, and she wasn't there. So That's another question mark, like not only to the motivation of this potential entity that might exist, or set of entities, or race of entities, or whatever you want to call them. But like, in addition to that, there's also this, is this malicious? Did they just sort of make a mistake? Mm-hmm. You know, was he interpreting the signals wrong? Like, because if it's not some actual entity and it's just the virus putting these ideas in his head based on what the rocks need, then maybe the signal got mixed up and they didn't get it right the first time. There could be a lot of things, but it is interesting that when he asked Rocky about it, Rocky did the wisecrack about having thin skin, right? Like, and you know, I don't even know how you humans evolved. You can't be out in space for 2 minutes. Like, and as funny as that is, it sort of covers up the fact that, like, why did you do that?
You did just try to assassinate me. I go back to like what you said early on, which is this an actual external force communicating with Halen, or is he losing his mind? Why not both? Right.
Yeah.
Like, these things are not mutually exclusive. So the idea that he's misinterpreting some of what they're communicating, or he's got the wrong impressions. Yeah. He's even saying after the fact, that's what you wanted. I thought that's what you wanted once the rocks get released. So there's real questions here, I think, still moving forward that I'm excited to kind of answer in episode 6. Was there any other stuff that we didn't really get through? I mean, it was such a dense episode. They all really are.
It's very true. The one thing that I wanted to mention about Ghost Gashad specifically, and just in general, the romantic aspect of this episode, which we talked about, like, we didn't know if there would be or wouldn't be the romantic side of things, but we had two drops in this episode that we haven't talked about. One is that Ghost Gashad kisses him, and it's very obvious that he was sort of expecting that to happen, even if it wasn't real. So there obviously was at least a one-way attraction there from Halen to Gashad, if it's his imagination, or two-way, if there is some semblance of reality to these characters. And presumably Gashad is dead, but like we said, who knows with this sci-fi rock stuff. And then, of course, Rocky, again, is this a manifestation of Halen or not? Rocky calls Aster Halen's girlfriend. And of course, he denies that, as he should. But ultimately, there are these little hint drops of, you know, romantic past and romantic future that get dropped into this episode, too. And I thought that was an interesting beat. I'm not sure where they're going to go with that, but I can tell that they're sort of laying seeds down.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you have Ghost Gashad repeating Aster's lines, right?
That too,
I've never seen the belt from this side. And I think that's really fascinating. I've really appreciated that we have not driven to some kind of like romantic coupling of Aster and Halen already. I won't be surprised if that's where we get at some point, right?
Yeah.
But I'm pretty pleased that we didn't like race into it, because part of me felt like when he has that final dream sequence with Rocky and Harmony shows up and she's like, I need you to do this for Aster. I'm like, oh God, is she going to tell him to go like seduce her? And that's
like, that would have been
this
bad.
Is going to take a real turn that will disappoint me. And they didn't. So I don't know why I'm even stressing it, but
no, I know what you mean. When they leave that much open, it's, you get these little creeping feelings. Oh, they're going to do a bad thing. Aren't they?
Yeah.
And so far they haven't. So they've, they've been good about it.
TV shows let you down, you know, and it's hard to like, get past the pain. You expect to be hurt again, Corey. I think it's a really great point, the whole, like, the Ghost Gashad scene and the way that, like, we're beginning to dig into at least, like, Halen's romantic perceptions, if not the reality of the romantic dynamic, you know. But that, like, closing shot of them holding hands, it's really... You know, it's intimate. I mean, I think it's easy to overlook the vastness of space and the isolation were such big themes that we talked about early on. The whole, like, hey, like, I just can't be here alone anymore, man.
Yeah.
Like, please. And we got to a point during this episode where Aster was, like, again ready to leave him and just be like, look, the QTA is going to take care of you. I got to go. I got to get out of here. So I'm glad that we kind of didn't. But yeah, that's episode 5. That is Rocky, Corey. Anything else that we didn't hit?
Oh, I'm sure. But I think we canvassed this thing pretty well. I mentioned it earlier. The one note that I have is I did write down all the radio stations that were being played or that were on the playlist from Solomon, which is just a fun little tidbit. He has the classical music, which ranges from the 1750s to the 2150s, of course, very classical.
Yeah.
Synthro from the 2160s to the 2250s. Triptech Hop from 2160s to 2250s, so sort of same era, and then the K Retro from 2000s to 2100s. So we're in both the classical and the K Retro era at current.
I
don't know if you knew that.
K Retro, is that like K-pop retro?
That's kind of the vibe that I got from it too.
I want like the deleted scene of Solomon dancing to K-pop after he's done with his shower.
Yeah, he's like, that was opera night, but K-Retro night is a lot more energetic,
Steven Root, like, stole the scene. If not for, like, Rocky in this episode, Steven Root, like, really would have been the funniest guy here. He just was so delightful. The
really
eyeshadow,
was.
Like, the whole thing, the whole presentation is so good. I love when you get an actor as fun as him turning up at a property like this and just like really chewing on the scenery. It's a good time, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, I just want to thank Mark again for sending us some feedback. He hit me up on Twitter. You can hit us up. Where can people find you, Corey, if they want to send us feedback or they got thoughts or feelings about Beacon 23 they want to share?
Yeah, for sure. You can always message me on Twitter /X.
Yeah.
At Kavx, CAVX, or on Threads, I guess. Technically, I go on Threads more than Twitter nowadays, but I think that's a pretty rare thing. I don't think that's really caught on. So we'll see what happens. You can also find me on Discord as well. Discord forced me to put like an underscore before my username because Discord usernames, it's a big thing. Anyway, but you also can just find me in the Pusher Recaps Discord and leave. And if you are there, you can always go to the Beacon 23 channel and drop your feedback directly in there so that we all can see it and talk about it. But we'll talk through it on the show.
Patreon.com/postshowrecaps. A $10 a month level gets you access to the full Discord. $5 gets you in the door, hanging out in the campus with us. There's a lot of great conversation happening there. Games, a new season of the Brantsfield firing up. We're playing D&D. It's a good time over there. You should join us. I'm at DM Philly in all the places. I'm over on Blue Sky, though. I'm not using it enough, and I'm like ready to begin my transition fully. So certainly go hit me up there. I'm hanging out on Twitter, streaming on Twitch when I can. It's been a quiet couple of months over on YouTube. What else? I'm talking about Yellowstone every week with the great Grace Leader. We wrapped up Tales from the Loop a couple of weeks back. I'm sure more is to come. We're going to be breaking down some Star Wars soon, talking year in review for 2023. But you will hear plenty about all of that as we approach it. We'll be back next week talking about episode 6 of Beacon 23. Until then, just please hold my hand, Corey. It's lonely.